Oh, we should give Ben a big hand, don't you think? I want to personally thank Ben for illustrating the title of this sermon, which is called Facing Your Fears. I'm so proud of him. He was freaked out, just like he said, about the roller coaster. You know, actually, there's a name for this. It's actually called coaster phobia. There's a name for that. Well, actually, it's really not the fear of roller coasters, you know, the piece of metal that you sit in. It's acrophobia, so the experts say, which is the fear of heights. But then even more experts say that people who are afraid of heights really aren't afraid of heights. What they're afraid of is falling from that height. So they have a word for that called bathophobia. These are all from the Greek, actually. Bathophobia, acrophobia. But I'm so proud of Ben for illustrating how to face your fears. And I discovered that everybody has different kinds of fears. It's kind of funny what some people are afraid of. And other people are kind of like, why are you afraid of that? It's no big deal. And we're going to explore fear today, because it seems to me that it's not just something I see in the Bible. It feels to me like everywhere I turn, I keep hearing about people who are afraid of this or afraid of that. And if it feels to you like every time you turn around, there's a new fear that's been, you know, developed, or a new fear that's being introduced, a new language for different kinds of fear, that's because it is. Every time I look up fear, and I do a couple times a year, I find new words to describe new fears that have just started to develop in the last couple of years. And I'm like, what's going on? Does it feel sometimes to you like fear dominates our world? I mean, look at the newspaper. There's all this talk about fear and fear of this. In fact, even when they're not talking about fear, it feels like they're reporting things that makes you afraid. Fear is big business. Millions and millions of dollars are made each year playing on people's fears. And I'm not just talking about movies. Fear just dominates the headlines. It dominates our world. The whole Brexit thing, all that is based upon fear. The people in Britain felt it was out of fear, if we don't, you know, get out of the European Union, it's going to hurt us. And so out of fear, many of them voted to get out. And then the response to that, look at the stock market. The response to Britain's getting out of the European Union just was all this fear. When the stock market crashes or when it goes down, what's it based on? Fear. The whole ISIS thing, what's that based upon? Fear. The whole transgender thing, that's dominating our headlines. It's all about fear. And people are selling fear, using fear, and it grips our lives. And if it feels like there's all these new fears, there are, but that doesn't mean that fear is a new thing. As far back as history can record, people faced fears, dealt with fears, were afraid of certain things. And I want to invite you to John chapter 6, where we're going to look at a passage that's 2,000 years old, but it's not because it's 2,000 years old. It's because something happens in this passage that gives us a glimpse into the power of fear, the nature of fear, and more importantly, reveals to us the secret for how to overcome our fears. It worked in Jesus' day. It works in our day. We don't have to be overcome by fear. We don't have to be driven by fear. Fear does not have to be the base of our lives. So I ask you to turn to John 6. Let me do that now. John chapter 6. We're going to start at verse 16. So if you stand with me, you'll see all kinds of fears in these verses. We're just going to read a couple. John 6, 16. Look what happens here. When evening came, Jesus' disciples went down to the lake, that's the Sea of Galilee, to where they got into a boat, set off across the lake for the little town of Capernaum. By now it was dark. Some people are afraid of the dark. And Jesus had not yet joined them. A strong wind was blowing, and the waters grew rough. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles across the water, they saw Jesus approaching the boat, walking on the water, and they were frightened. The older version of this NIV says they were terrified. But he said to them, "It is I. Don't be afraid." And then they were willing to take, I love that phrase. Then they were willing to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat reached the shore where they were headed. You may be seated. Did you see all the different kinds of fear? I've identified at least 6 kinds of fears, and there's actually more than probably what I have taken the time to see in this passage. They start off real early. When evening came, verse 16, the first verse we read, and later on in the passage, it talks about how it was getting dark, and it was dark. One of the first fears that people face is the fear of darkness. In fact, one thing you could write down about fears is that everybody is afraid of something. The 6 fears that are mentioned in this passage are just a few of the fears. Like I said, every time I do research on fear, I see more. There's thousands of them now. But there's a couple here in this passage. Everybody is afraid of something. Now, you may be sitting there saying, "Well, I'm not afraid of you know, the things that other people are afraid of." Fine. But you're afraid of something. Everybody is afraid of something. And if you don't know what your fear is, what you're afraid of, then you're in a little bit of trouble, because that means you're not aware of what's the deep things that are driving our lives. Sometimes we mask the fear. Sometimes we get so good at pretending that we're not afraid. Sometimes we get so focused on other people's fears, what's wrong with them, they're acting in fear, they're responding in fear, that we're blind to our own fears. But everybody is afraid of something. Maybe it's bugs. Maybe it's the darkness. Maybe it's water. There's, you know, agoraphobia. Maybe it's being in a boat on the water. Maybe it's being on a boat in the water at night. Or maybe it's being in the boat on the water at night in a storm. I mean, those are all the things that are happening in this passage. But none of these things that I just mentioned are what the disciples are afraid of, or at least not all the disciples. We know that 4 of the disciples were fishermen. And so they probably grew up, especially James and John, Peter and Andrew, because it says when they followed Jesus, they left their father, left their boats, left their father's boats. So they had probably been raised on the Sea of Galilee, probably had been raised in the boats. They'd been in all kinds of storms because they swept up all the time in the Sea of Galilee. They practiced night fishing on a regular basis, so they probably weren't afraid of the night or the dark or being in the water in dark. But only 4 of the 12 were fishermen. And we don't really know whether or not any of the other disciples were afraid of the darkness or the water or storms. But later, Matthew and Mark tell the exact same story that John tells. But they tell it with a little bit different twist, and they talk about some of the fears the disciples were facing. And I'd like for you to think through what are some of the fears that you have. We're launching today a series. We've been working our way through the Gospel of John. We come today to John 6, and we're going to stop here just for a couple of weeks, 7 weeks to be exact, because I see fear happening in so many people's lives. I want to spend more than just 1 sermon on it. I'm going to talk from verses 16 to 21 today, but then next week we're going to look at a different fear, and the week after that, over the next 7 weeks, we're going to look at different fears and learn how to face them, learn how to overcome them, learn how to cross them out of our lives, learn how to deal with the fears that are dragging us down, that are keeping us from reaching where we want to go. Because whether you're a young person who is reaching out for goals, or whether you're an older person who looks back and you've got fears, or whether you're afraid of dying, or fear of getting old, or fear of not getting a job, or fear of whether or not you're going to be accepted or rejected, all these fears run our lives. And again, it may not be something that you're thinking about. I'm afraid of rejection, though some people say that. But you know, while most people deal with the fear of rejection, a lot of people have it happening way down underneath, and they're lashing out, or they're powering up, or they're literally running away from, or their shyness. All these things are just symptoms of that deep fear of rejection. Some of the most successful people in the world, business, sports, church, academia, some of the most successful people that you know, some of the most successful people in the world are successful because they are driven by fear. They would never admit that. They would never announce that. And in some circles, you know, it's terrible to talk about your fears, but that's what drives them to be successful. That's what drives them to power up in certain relationships. What drives them to run a business and to be successful, to get their name in lights, to beat everybody else on the court, to beat everybody else on the field. They're driven by the fear of failure or the fear of rejection or the fear of I won't be seen as important or the fear of not being thought of in an admirable way. I mean, all these fears are driving our lives. Last week when I announced the summer blitz and explained what that was, that because God has been blessing us, we're going to launch out and doing some of the renovations a little bit earlier. Because God's been blessing us, we're going to work harder to reach people for Christ. Because of God's blessing, it's going to create some changes in people's lives. In the O'Leary Auditorium, we talked about how we're going to move into the RNC. When I talked, just for the summer, when I talked about the B for blitz means that we're going to do the B's, some of you are like, I don't do the B's. Some of you don't know what they are. The B of blitz is what we call the five B's here. Build relationships with people who don't know Christ. That's what terrifies so many of us. Building relationships with people in our neighborhood. Building relationships with people that we don't know. And then, you know, bringing them to church, helping them belong, build, bring, belong, helping them believe, sharing our faith so people come to Christ, and then helping them become more like Christ. Those five B's, that's our strategy as a church. We want to keep doing that. I've discovered that the two biggest fears of the B's are the first one and the fourth one. Building relationships with people just terrifies people. And then the fourth one, believing, sharing our faith, telling somebody else how to come to Jesus Christ. Two of the five B's don't happen in many people's lives in our church because of fear. So some of you last week were, I can't do that. When we talked about moving to the RNC here in the Elyria campus, some of you are afraid of change. I only go to one place. I only go at one time. I can't go to church at 8:15 or 10. I can't change. Some of us, we actually have a name for fear of change. It's called metathesiophobia. Meta, which means change. Thesiophobia, it's another three Greek words all slammed together. They have a name for fear of change because so many people are afraid of change. So we just want to face our fear. Don't be afraid of change. Let's go down to the RNC and let's be excited to worship together. And those of you on Avon Lake and Vermilion, be excited for what God's doing here. And all of us and all of our campus, let's all commit ourselves to practicing the B's, to building relationships with people this summer. And I want to get a loud amen, right? Building relationships with people this summer. Actually, you did better than I thought you would. Good for you. I thought you were going to go, amen. Good for you. Now, I hope you bring that same enthusiasm when you realize, you know, I really don't know my neighbor. And every time Pastor Jim talks about building relationships, I'm like, I can't do that. Maybe you tried it one time and you just made a fool of yourself. You're like, I have the fear of becoming a fool, you know, or being looked like a fool. It's also the fear of rejection. I'm going to talk some about my fears in this area later on this summer. Well, because we have so much to talk about, so much to learn about the different kinds of fears, let's be men and women of faith so that when God calls us to do something that might involve change, or it might involve changing our routine or changing things more comfortable. Let's just embrace it, right? Let's be people who are embracing the new things that God is doing. Because one of the famous phrases of the Old Testament and New Testament is God saying, behold, I do a new thing. I'm singing a new song. Sing a new song, Lord. All these new things that God's doing, but new means change. So let's just kind of say, I want to be a person who embraces the change that God is bringing in my life or in the life of the church that I love. But those of you who would say, well, I have no fear of change, well, that's awesome. Everybody has different kinds of fears. You could write that down as kind of a second point. While everybody is afraid of something, we discover that everybody's fears are different. And as I said, even in this passage, the kinds of things that maybe some of the disciples might have been afraid of, being in a boat that's rocking, you know, it's not a big boat. They didn't have big boats on the Sea of Galilee. So it's a little boat in shallow water being rocked and driven by the wind and driven by the waves. Maybe some of the disciples are freaking out. Some of them weren't. Everybody's fears are different. But as we work our way through this passage, we see a word that stands out in, let's see, verse 19, that captures this kind of a paralyzing fear. See, it says, by now it was dark and Jesus had not joined them. A strong wind, I'm in verse 18 now, a strong wind was blowing, the waters grew rough. And when they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus approaching the boat, walking on the water, and here's our phrase, and they were frightened. I love the New International Version most of the time, but every once in a while, they'll translate a word or a phrase that I'm just like, why did you use that word? This is one of those times. This word in the New International Version that says they were frightened is the word phobia, where most translations translate as terrified or terror. Here comes right out of the lexicons. Phobia is to be struck with terror, seized with alarm, to be put to light, to put to flight. It's to withdraw quickly, to be put to flight by terror. Now, maybe it's just me, but when I see the word frightened, does that anybody else feel like frightened is like a little bit less afraid than terrified, or is it just me? I mean, terrified is like, ah! Frightened is like, oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I know that not every word that I feel it means something is the way everybody else did. I was using a word in a meeting this past week that I thought is a real popular word, that everybody understood what it meant, and that it meant the same thing I thought. And as soon as I said the word, everybody was like, oh, don't use that word. That word's not a good word. I'm like, what? So maybe frightened is really scary to you. To me, it's not. I like the older NIV, which says terrified. I like the ESV, the NASB, which uses the word terrified, because that fits with the word phobeo and how it's most often used in the New Testament. This struck, this, you know, almost so overcome with fear that you're either paralyzed or you just flee. One of my daughters experienced this past week. I know there's at least 1.5 million people in the Cleveland area who do not suffer from agoraphobia, which is the fear of being around a lot of people. Because on Sunday night, a week ago, today, there was over 1.5, they say, million people in downtown Cleveland celebrating, hello, the Cavs national, you know, world championship. So exciting. Well, my daughter was with a couple of her friends and their mother who works down there. And so they figured they could, you know, get there early and hang out at her work and be around there when the parade started. And so she's down there with all of her friends. And about 5 o'clock, after the parade is all over, many of you heard there was gunshots somewhere around East 4th and I think Ontario. The casino, Jack Casino down there. I'm not exactly sure exactly where it was, but there was these gunshots that rung out, and there's still, you know, tons of people that were, you know, milling around down there. And when you hear a gunshot, it's, you know, it sounds real scary. And I think even more so today, because crazy things happen in, you know, nightclubs and schools and parks and stadiums, and just gunshots start ringing out. And we live in a world where people bring guns and just start shooting into crowds of people. So in a sense, we should be afraid of that. But my daughter was apparently very close to where the gunshots rang out. And when they rang out, it was two of them. She got her attention. Next thing you know, she sees this mass of people running. And she said they had hysteria on their face. So she heard the gunshots. She saw the terror on their face. They're running. She's like, I'm going to get run over. And instantly, she was struck with fear. And the whole group just turned around and started to run. And when she told me where she ran to, I said, no, you didn't run that far. You would have had to gone down through the flats, you know, across this bridge. She ran to this area called Tremont. It's a long ways from where she was. And I'm like, there's no way you ran to there. She named the place, and I look up on the map. Yep, it's in Tremont. She ran over a mile, just, I'm out of here. And she calls me. I'm in a meeting. I didn't pick up the phone call. I'm not sure I even saw it. She called my wife. She was in a meeting. She called my son, who was also down in Cleveland, and he wasn't that far from the gunshots, though they weren't together. And my son said he heard she left a message, and the terror in her voice was, he said, I wasn't sure whether she was laughing or crying, and then I realized she's sobbing with a tone of voice that he has never heard in her. Why? Because she heard the gunshots. She saw the terror on people's face, and she saw the mass of people running with hysteria toward her, and she got caught up in the fear, and be put to flight by terror. Well, when I heard about it later that night, I'm like, fear started rising up in me because my daughter was in trouble and I wasn't there for her. I didn't pick up the phone, and I'm like, what could have happened to her? And later, we found out that people were saying, that two people were shot dead, through these shots, but in reality, that was fear-mongering that got out of control. A teenage girl got shot twice in the leg. That's a big deal, but that's a completely different thing than two people being shot dead. But this is the nature of fear. It causes you to run. It causes you to imagine things. It causes you to repeat things. It causes you to just do things you would never do because you are so struck by phobia that it takes over your life. And my daughter's not a fearful person, but she said, Dad, I just kind of lost track of time. I lost track. I can't even tell you some of the things that happened. I have a hard time telling you where the path that I went because I was just terrified. That's why I got the map out. And I said, if you were here and you landed here, you had to go through the flats. You had to go run down. She goes, yeah, I remember running down and then running up. I'm like, oh, my goodness. And I don't know if you've ever been that afraid. I'll tell a story later on in this series about a time where that happened to me. It had to do with what I thought was the rapture coming. Terrified. But, these kinds of fears that are not just being nervous, not just, well, I'm a little skittish about that. It's this terror that takes over your life. That's the word phobeo. That's the word that John uses, who, by the way, was there. John, the disciple who's writing this, was in the boat. He had firsthand experience. The word he uses to describe the fear the disciples were experiencing was this terror, this fleeing mechanism inside of you. Just, ah! But it wasn't the darkness. It wasn't the wind. It wasn't the waves. It wasn't the storm. It wasn't being in the boat. It wasn't the combination of all those things. It was something that we still talk about today. And what we're going to see with the nature of this fear is the power, you could write this down, the power of fear to take over our lives, the power of fear to cause us to do things, say things, take positions, go a direction in our life that we would never, ever have considered going. We would never, ever considered saying. We would never have ever considered doing. All because of the power of this kind of fear. Now, the Bible has at least six words. The New Testament has at least six different words. And when I say different, I mean different bases. Because like the word phobeo that I talked about before, there's like four or five different words that come off of that. So I'm just talking about six different base words for fear. And the reason why is because not only does it recognize that there's different kinds of fear, but, there's good fear and there's bad fear. There's the fear of God. That's a good thing. There's the fear of judgment, which can be a good thing, being judged by God. That can be a good thing, but then there's also a fear of being judged by God that's a bad thing because we misunderstand God. And we turn God into this judgmental ogre, and we ignore that the holy, sovereign God who has the right to judge and who judges rightly, we ignore that view of God. Instead, we create a misconception of God, that God's just this angry, can't wait to punish people. They're so similar. There's the God that judges, but there's a complete different understanding, the God who rightly judges because he's holy versus the God who's just angry judging everybody because he can't wait to punch people out. Both words use the word judge, but we should be afraid of this God, and we shouldn't be afraid of this God over here, because this God doesn't exist, the angry God who can't wait to beat you up because you made a mistake. That's a misconception of God. Well, fear creates misconceptions. It blinds us to what's real, to reality, and it creates things that aren't there, so we don't deal with the reality. Therefore, we don't deal with a holy, just God who has the right to judge because of who he is, because we're so consumed by this misconception of God. That's just one of many different examples of how fear distorts, and fear has the power to change perceptions. It has the power to create false realities out of thin air. That's the power of fear. It destroys relationships. It destroys our relationship with God. It destroys our destiny. It destroys our future. It destroys us from the inside out when we are driven by, living by fear. We are so far away from the joy, the peace that God has for those who follow him, who believe him, who trust him. So this is one of the reasons we need 7 weeks to talk about fear. There's so much to talk about that I don't have time to talk about today. In this passage, many preachers use this passage to preach about how the fear had the power to blind the disciples so they couldn't see Jesus. They couldn't recognize Jesus. They see him walking on the water, John says. And verse 19, they were terrified. They were frightened. Keep your Bibles open. That's good preaching, that fear blinds us from seeing Jesus. That's good preaching, that fear blinds us from recognizing God in our life. But that's not what's happening in this text. Sometimes good preaching is not biblical preaching. There are other passages that talk about how fear blinds us from seeing who God really is. But that's not what this passage is saying. Look carefully. They're not afraid of Jesus walking on the water until they don't recognize him and think that he's a ghost. Actually, Matthew chapter 14 and Mark chapter 6 literally say they were frightened because they thought he was a ghost. So it's not the fear of Jesus that blinded them. It's just the storm. It's just the wind and the waves. So you can write this down. Adversity blinds us. Storms, the storms, the wind, the darkness is what kept them from recognizing Jesus. It was dark. He was far away. It was, you know, wind blowing, whipping. It's the adversity that blinds us. But what John wants us to see is that it's fear that controls us. It's the fear that thinking of Jesus was a ghost. So I'm trying really hard to avoid all references to Ghostbusters in this sermon. John says it was when they, saw who Jesus was, the figure of Jesus, thinking it was a ghost. Again, Matthew and Mark both tell us that it was a ghost. Let me point this up here. I'll put it real quick for you. When the disciples saw him walking in the lake, they were terrified. Same word again. It's a ghost, they said, and cried out in fear. This fear, this terror comes because they don't recognize Jesus. The adversity, the wind, the waves was blinding them to seeing who Jesus was. And so when they, saw this figure, the Greek word is phantasm. It's an apparition. It's just this glowing, floating, looks like a human kind of form kind of thing. That's what terrified them. They didn't see it was Jesus. And so this fear just causes them to be overwhelmed, and they're grown men crying out in fear. Again, the Greek is so colorful. This word cried out is the word to shriek. First thing I thought, it was like a little girl. He screams like a girl. Can you see the disciples? Big old forearms, used to being out there rowing boats, pulling in fish. Big old guys shrieking like little girls. That's what the Greek is. Screaming, shrieking in fear. And I actually love this. I'm going to highlight this word here. I love the word it. You know, it's like, it's a creature. You know, they don't see it as Jesus yet. They don't see who Jesus is. It's an it, and it's walking in the water. Ah, fear, it's a ghost, you know. They've never seen a ghost. They don't know what a ghost looks like, but their fear, their imagination, the power of fear just overwhelming their hearts, their minds, their lives, and it's a ghost. And so they're terrified. They're crying out in fear. Fear has completely gripped them. This is the power of that phobia that grips us. I knew a person in Kansas who had agoraphobia. Agora is the marketplace, it's public. So fear of a marketplace is not fear of shopping malls, which is a fear I have, because most husbands have that fear. No dig against my wife. She's not a big shopper. But agora means a lot of people in public. And so this lady that would come to our church once in a while, who was so terrified by being around a lot of people, she would come in late and she would hang around from the outsides and always be near a door so she, if the fear would overwhelm her, she could run out real quickly and be outside. This is a very real fear. This fear of just being swamped by people, maybe similar to claustrophobia. All these people are crushing me, and I don't know what I'm doing. Like, this is just an example of the power of fear. Sometimes fear so overwhelms people, so grips them, that they do something that's really, really stupid. And I'm going to tell a story in 3 weeks about some stupid things that I did out of fear. I can't believe I did it, but... it happened. Fear just it overpowers us, and we say things, we do things we would never ever thought we would do. And so John uses this word phobia to describe the terror, the crying out in fear, the being gripped by fear. And this is where I want to stop right here. What do we do when fears have so gripped us that we can't fulfill God's purpose for our life? What do we do when fears are keeping us from reaching our destination? I love verse 21 of this passage. It says that as soon as they recognized him and were willing to take him in, they are immediately, the boat got to where it was going. As long as they were stuck in fear, they would never reach their destination. But as soon as the fear was dissipated, they got to where they were going. Fear blocks us from our destination. It blocks us from our purpose in life. Fear keeps us from experiencing, from tasting, from enjoying what God has for us because we are gripped in this fear. What do we do when fear has this kind of hold on us? And at this point where I'm pausing, I'd like for you to think about the biggest fear in your life, the fear that keeps you from God's purpose for your life. The fear that keeps you from enjoying God's blessing on an area in your life. The fear that keeps holding you back when things aren't going well. That you just keep, you smash into that wall of fear. You smash into that wall of fear. What do you do when you are gripped by that kind of fear? Well, back to John. This is one of those times in the Bible when the juxtaposition of the words are just so fantastic. So find verse 19. Last word of verse 19 is this word frightened, or we said the word terrified. It's that phobia. Look at the very next word after John 6:19. That would be John 6:20. What's the first word of John 6:20? Nobody has their Bibles open? It's the word but. One of those great buts of the Bible. I've talked about this before. This is so significant. But, now, let me stop right there because I just got an insight as I was studying this past week. The word but there is used as what they call a logical contrastive. Now, don't get glassy-eyed on me. This is huge. a logical contrastive means that what's about to be said, what's about to happen, is in direct, stark contrast to what is happening. This is a divine interruption. This is a divine but. So Jesus is there, but they don't recognize him. They're gripped by fear. Phobia has taken over their life, and all of a sudden there's this interruption, this contrast, this stark interruption that interrupts their fear, it interrupts the being gripped by fear, it interrupts the power of fear. Everything's about to change. That's why John uses this kind of word. But he said to them, "It is I. Do not be afraid." Let me write this down. Everybody needs help interrupting the power of fear. We don't want to live our lives. Paul wrote to Timothy and said, God's not given us a spirit of fear, but of love and of power and a sound mind. We need to have that fear interrupted, the power of that fear broken. Here's how I think about this. This is the power of electricity. This past week, or 2 weeks ago, I was doing, I can't even admit this, my wife might hear this. I was changing the kitchen light without turning off the power. Go ahead, say it. You're stupid. I know. I couldn't see. I needed some light, and I just, whatever. So I turned the switch off. So I'm a little bit step in the right direction. Just ignore my stupidity. But I've got, insulated pliers, and I'm not touching any wires, without... with my bare hands, and I've checked to see that there's power there. It's not, but I still know you should turn off the breaker. And so I'm changing the light in the kitchen, and being very careful to put all these things together. And I'm thinking, there might be a way that you could get electrocuted here. You should be really careful. And so instead of changing the breaker or turning the breaker off, I just was more careful. And as I'm doing this, I'm thinking about stories of people who, got electrocuted or, got shot, because technically they say electrocution brings death. And it happens when you cross wires, and I've heard of stories about people who somehow have been with such powerful electricity, 220 or something like that, that they got locked on. The power of the electricity, flowed through their body. The human body conducts that kind of electricity instead of blocking it. And so they're locked on, and somebody else sees that, they're having this fit, and they can't get out. So they try to push them away or grab them, and then they get charged, And so they say the way that you should help somebody who is locked on to electricity is hit them with something, or run at full speed so you tackle them or something, but don't just grab them, pull away, because then it'll get you, and it's like three or four of you, being all in this electric charge. Why? Because electricity has power like fear. It has power, and when it grabs a hold of us, when we grab a hold of it, it grips us, and we can't get free from it. And a light switch interrupts the flow of power. Just clicking on that light or some way of interrupting, it stops the power, so that that power stops to that switch or to that light or whatever it is. And what we need is something more powerful than fear. Just like a switch is more powerful than electricity, it interrupts that. We need something more powerful, someone more powerful to interrupt our fear. Who is that? I already told you. Jesus said to them, "It is I." So Jesus interrupts our fear simply with his word. "It is I" could be translated, maybe should be translated, "I am," or "I am here." Some people like to say that this is a reference to the God of the Old Testament. Maybe, entirely possible, but the language simply means that "I am here now." Was it Underdog or Mighty Mouse who said, "Have no fear, Mighty Mouse is here"? Who said that? "Have no fear, Superman is here"? I can't remember from my childhood, but they stole it from this passage right here. "Do not be afraid. I am here. Have no fear. Jesus is here." It's kind of fun, kind of cute, but it's so powerfully true. The theology of "I am here, therefore you should have no fear" is life transforming. Jesus interrupts our fear simply with his word. His word is more powerful than any fear. If we will believe his word, it can overpower, overcome, interrupt, destroy our fears. But we've got to believe what Jesus says. But it's not just his word, because when he says, I am here, it's helping us see that Jesus interrupts our fear simply by his presence. I am here. Isn't this good? I am here. Have no fear. I want to challenge us to be aware of the presence of Jesus. I want to challenge you in two different ways here. That you don't allow fear to control your life. And then secondly, that because you know Jesus and you know his power, that you be a person who stands up in our fear-based society and you say, we will not be driven by fear. We will not be controlled by fear. There's a guy in our service today named Marcos Athenaeus who's here, who stood up at an Amherst school board meeting this past week and said, we're not going to be driven by fear. We're not going to be cowed by political fear. We're not going to let people's fears shut our mouth. We need people to stand up at work, at school, in our community and say, enough. We're not going to let fear, the fear of what people say about us, the lies they say about us, we're not going to let the fears of people that drive people's lives run our lives. And friends, as the church, we're supposed to be people who stand in the midst of fear and say, Jesus is here. In fact, I want to challenge you to do that with me on July 14th, that we put feet to our prayers, that we put action. On July 14th, which is the anniversary of our 714, are you still wearing these little wristbands? On July 14th, we're going to have our first anniversary of our 714 prayer, that every morning, every night, we pray at 714. 2 Chronicles 7:14, and we seize the moment to say, I will not let fear run our country. I will not let the fear of what's going to happen with the presidency. That's not good. That's not our salvation, who becomes president. We need Christians who will say, I will put feet to my faith. I will stand and I will pray. So I'm inviting us to the Memorial Park, sometimes called Washington Park, downtown Lorain. It's in your bulletin. 7 o'clock on July 14th. Will you join me, all campuses, in Lorain, the place where we're starting a church, we're planning a campus, that we will pray for at 7 o'clock on July 14th. Will you join me? Say yes. Will you join me on July 14th? And we're going to take a stand, and we're going to pray. We're not going to have a rally of politics and not going to be signs. We're going to pray because we believe that prayer has the power to bring the presence of Jesus into Lorain County, into our world. And that's what we need. Yeah, I'm going to vote. I have no idea who I'm going to vote for, but I have no hope that the president of the United States is going to change America for the better. It's Jesus, his presence, and it's Christians filled with faith, filled with the love that casts out fear, who instead of just sit on their butts in churches, get out and start loving and acting and praying and getting together. Can we do this? I'm getting excited about that. That's July 14th. Make sure you come to that. Why? Because Jesus says, I have a habit of interrupting fear with just my word, with just my presence. That's how powerful the presence, the word of Jesus Christ is. And this is what why people say that the I am is a reference to the God of the... that's pictured in the Old Testament, same God, that he is the I am. He is Yahweh. I'm here. Don't have any fear. In fact, one of the most loved passages in the whole Bible, Psalm 23, paints this picture. David says, even though, don't stop there, just think about it for a second. Even though I walk through unbelievable difficulties, the valley of the shadow of death, where I'm afraid that I might die, big fear. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will not fear. I will fear no evil. Why? Because I am is here. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. You can write it down. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Write it down, memorize it. I know most of you had this memorized, but think about it. Throughout this series, throughout this day, throughout this week, Jesus is with you. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. In fact, you've already got it memorized. Close your eyes with me in all of our campuses. Let's say this phrase together. Say it out loud. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Let's say it again. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. And when you say it, emphasize different words. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. I will fear no evil, for you are with me. I will feel no evil, for you are with me. You're here. And God, my prayer for everyone hearing my voice right now is that these words, the reality of these words, would so grip us. It would interrupt the fear that controls us. It would interrupt, it would break the power of fear in our lives. Simple words, but powerful words. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will not fear, for my God is with me. So whom shall I be afraid? Lord, today, this week, this series, break the power of fear in our life. Help us to see that we don't need to fear, for you are with us. You know the fears that run our lives. We bring them to you. God, we need you. Break the power of fear. Interrupt it. Speak your words of power and presence in each one of our lives. In this moment, for we pray in Jesus' name, amen.